Welcome back to Hollywood Declassified. I'm John Wayne Law, your host. We are still talking about Montgomery Clift and the making of Raintree County in this episode or this series. We are promoting a new book that I wrote, which is called The Longest Suicide in Hollywood, The Death of Montgomery Clift. I am doing some excerpts from the book and then some other kind of commentary, and you hear bits. We actually did, you hear a snippet of Montgomery Clift every now and then as well, because we did have a few of those. The book came out or is being released on July 23rd, so this podcast is running around the time of that. So some of the episodes are debuting before, and some will be after, I think. Although we're recording this in advance of all that, so you never know what's going to change. But it's been an interesting journey, certainly with the pandemic, doing a lot of this work during the pandemic, and really trying to pull together the book. It's given me an opportunity in a way, because it's been really good to kind of focus on something that I really didn't know would actually be completed. This book and project has actually gone on for a very long time. And so, I started working on this many, many years ago. In fact, one of the first things I ever wrote was about the movie Raintree County. And so I sort of had the idea in the back of my mind. And for a long time, I really didn't know if I would actually ever do the book. I wasn't really sure of the angle. I think the challenge with the project was I didn't really want to do a biography on Montgomery Clift. I wanted to do something that was a little different. And so the idea of this book really was to focus on a very specific period, and not just on the movie Raintree County, but what the movie Raintree County and the accident that happened at that time, and the impact that that would have on the remainder of Montgomery Clift's life, is what I sort of was fascinated by. The book is obviously available in print and ebook and enhanced ebook, and so you'll get a little more of that. We are going to go in now and to talk a little bit more about the actual finishing of the movie Raintree County. As you've heard in the previous episodes, if you've listened, we talked a bit about Montgomery Clift and where he ended up in getting to making Raintree County, and then there was a dinner party that resulted in the end of the evening of a car crash. And so we then had Montgomery Clift in the hospital recuperating, and so now we're going to look about his recuperating kind of coming to an end, and him sort of trying to get back to work. A glistening sunlight came through the wall of glass at the back of the house as it bounced off the water from the pool. Monty tried to keep the light soft enough to avoid squinting. Any facial movement hurt. Early in the day, when the light was soft, he could enjoy the Southern California experience. After leaving the hospital after the crash, Monty rented a small house on Sunset Boulevard. It had a swimming pool in the back where the actor would lie in soft early morning sunlight, attempting to recuperate. He reportedly walked around the house in a drunken stupor, existing mostly on a handful of pain pills mixed with alcohol. Even though doctors had urged him not to drink because it would slow his recovery, he felt he needed it to cope with the pain and the anguish. Since his jaw had been wired shut, solid food was an issue. To eat, he would take soft foods like avocado and place them in his mouth, mashing them between his tongue and the roof of his mouth. It made a terrible mashing sound, according to those who were there with him during meals. Other times, he would vigorously blend or liquefy his meals in a Waring blender that he had in the kitchen. Then he would drink down his concoctions less dramatically with a straw. He avoided mirrors. He didn't want to see the damage that had been done. He thought his career was over. After several weeks in the hospital, Monty went home to a rented house in Beverly Hills and continued to his recuperation. In addition to his head wounds, Monty also suffered severe whiplash and spent part of his time confined to his bed. His father, along with his New York secretary, flew to Los Angeles to be there to help. In addition, friends like Libby Holman, Elizabeth Taylor, and Kevin McCarthy were frequent visitors. Monty refused to drop out of the film. After 9 weeks to recuperate from his injuries, Monty was given the okay from his doctors to return to work. Those close to him feared his returning to work, but more so they feared him being unable to complete the film. Filming on Raintree County resumed on July 23, 1956, with Clift and Taylor on location in Mississippi and then on to Kentucky. In Danville, Kentucky, screenwriter Millard Kaufman recalled Monty as a ball of tension. "I've never seen anyone under such pressure," he said, "except in combat during the war." He gave the impression of being charged up all the time without ever exploding. In nearby Lexington, the governor was on hand with townspeople to make Monty an honorary colonel. However, the ceremony nearly didn't happen when Monty and Elizabeth arrived late. By the time they finally arrived, the governor had left, turning the duties over to his wife. Monty was not in the best condition thanks to drugs and alcohol he used to calm himself for fear of being in front of a large crowd. He managed to mumble, "Thank you very much," and then ignored the crowd entirely and disappeared. For Monty, returning to the film was frightening. He kept a picture of his crashed car on the set with him, telling everyone it was amazing that he had survived. Although most of his injuries to his body had healed, there was considerable pain and some swelling still on the side of his face. His jaw was still wired shut, which made him even more self-conscious about his appearance. Speaking scenes were initially out because his jaw had made a terrible snapping sound when it spoke. Monty himself joked, "I sound like Frankenstein monster." To maintain his strength, he tried various methods of ingesting food. He drank 1 quart of orange juice and 1 quart of skim milk for breakfast. For lunch, he drank skim milk mixed with 3 broken eggs for protein. It was nearly impossible to eat solid food. His agent, Herman Citron, came to the set one day and convinced him to try and eat steak. It was painful and not a pretty sight. More than that, his emotional state was even shakier than before the crash. He was sweating profusely and reportedly had to change his shirt as many as 8 times to get through a scene. His appearance had changed. His once handsome face was less youthful and dramatic. Though doctors had repaired much of the damage, Monty looked like his old self, but upon closer inspection, the right side of his face, the jawline and cheekbone were less chiseled than before. Some swelling initially was visible. He had a scar on the bridge of his nose and a tear in his upper lip that he had to be hidden by makeup. His insecurities that people could see the changes compounded the situation and made it even more difficult for him to work. He believed that his looks had been lost in the crash and he would never be the same. In many ways, he was right. He continued to self-medicate with both alcohol and painkillers. After the jaw had healed, he was able to do his lines, but his drug-induced state made his lines come out wrong, if they came out at all. In one take, he reportedly broke into laughter when he drunkenly fell into a carriage that he was supposed to be climbing into. MGM had initially promised Monty and Elizabeth that location sets would be closed to spectators, but knowing they needed to keep the movie production in the news and in front of the public, the stars were often subject to local dignitaries and common townspeople showing up to catch a glimpse of the actors at work. Monty tried best to avoid his fans looking for pictures and autographs or gawking at what he felt were his mangled features. In constant pain, he kept his gray satchel, his familiar doctor's bag, by his side, full of the menagerie of drugs that would get him through the production. He did his best to get through the remainder of filming. He was shot almost entirely from the right profile because the left side was swollen and suffered nerve damage, and it lacked expression. If his left side was ever within camera view, it was only from a distance where the shot would not pick up the problems. In addition to his constant drug use, Monty's drinking became heavier than before the crash. He had to struggle to complete most scenes. His drug regimen became a science project to both help him perform and get him through the day. His scenes took longer and required more takes, and the cameraman had to pay special attention to the angles they used for his close-ups. The cast and crew felt the strain. The film crew began using secret words to describe Monty's state on any given day. For bad, they would use the word Georgia. For very bad, it was Florida. When he was at his worst, they would say it was Zanzibar. Some members of the crew blamed the director, Edward Dmytryk, rather than Monty for passively allowing the film to fail. Taylor and Clift began demanding changes to the script, and Dmytryk allowed them. Dmytryk's failure to control the situation and corral the cast and crew after Monty's crash allowed the film to lose shape. After shooting in Mississippi, the cast and crew headed to Kentucky. By late August, Ranger County was on location in Danville, which substituted for the Indiana countryside, detailed in the book. The Lockridge family had the opportunity to meet the cast and crew while on location. They look forward to meeting the man who would bring Ross Lockridge's John Shaughnessy to life. Since the character in many ways resembled the author, they thought Montgomery Clift's presence on the screen would elevate the picture. However, after the crash, Monty was still in pain and recovering from his near-death experience, and it was hard not to notice. I shook the hand of someone bent over, fidgety, gaunt, bloodshot, and much older than his 35 years, said Larry Lockridge. His efforts were heroic, but still the great actor mumbled, moved his wired jaw with difficulty, forgot his lines, and seemed to turn manic and drugged. The heat during location shooting led to additional problems for Elizabeth Taylor, when her period clothing became so tight it limited her ability to breathe. One afternoon, she collapsed and began hyperventilating. Monty's doctor bag quickly appeared, along with a bottle of Demerol and a syringe. Delivered by a doctor on the set, the medication calmed her down and enabled her to continue. Though many reported she was often late to her scenes, delaying production while off being romanced by Mike Todd. The romance was a welcome diversion for Taylor, who had saw the movie turning into something less than she had hoped. I had an interesting part as a schizophrenic bride, she said, but the picture was bad. Filming in Danville didn't improve Monty's situation either. The recurring pain during his recovery, combined with the side effects from drugs designed to alleviate the pain, caused him to become erratic. Reporter Boyd Martin reported for a local paper during the shoot, saying, "Monty is the worst coordinated man I have ever seen." The drugs and stress caused him insomnia, so he couldn't sleep at night. His continual concern that the camera was capturing a hideous figure rather than the handsome leading man he had once been left him consumed with anxiety. If that weren't bad enough, on his on-set behavior when cameras weren't rolling was equally troubling. He avoided mirrors, not wanting to see himself, and his erratic actions had everyone on edge. On one evening, Monty was caught running naked through town, and he had to be escorted back to his room, unaware of what he was doing. On another occasion, he broke one of his toes when he kicked a tree too hard after Dimitrik had told him to leave the set because he was too drunk to work. Sleeping pills left him hazy and not in control of his actions. On yet another evening, while smoking, he passed out again and burned two fingers on his lit cigarette. Fearing bad press or worse, MGM positioned a policeman outside his hotel room for the remainder of the location shooting, hoping to avoid a repeat episode of his naked run through town. During his time in Danville, Monty also started ordering his steak nearly uncooked. He called it Blue Rare. He would eat it with his hands after coating it with butter and pepper. Elizabeth Taylor had her own problems at work. Mike Todd was continuing to pursue her on location. He even used Monty to get to her, even though Monty was unpredictable and not a fan of Todd's. Monty presented her with a pearl ring from Todd while on the set one afternoon. It came with a message that an engagement ring was forthcoming. By the time the cast and crew returned to Hollywood in October, Hollywood was abuzz with the news that Elizabeth Taylor was divorcing Michael Wilding, and Luella Parsons reported that Monty was in very bad health. When the final close-ups were captured and the film wrapped, Monty returned to his home, believing that his career was over, even though he was sure the movie would make money, if only so fans could gasp at his damaged features.